And welcome to Ladies Who London podcast. I'm Emily Dell.
And I'm Alex Lacey, and we are qualified London Blue Badge tourist guides.
Each week we bring to you some of the best bits of London.
We talk about our favourite people, places and events with a bit of information, a lot of laughs and a whole lot of fun.
We can be found on Instagram at Ladies Who London podcast and on our websites guideemily.com.
And alexlacey.com for information about our upcoming walking tours and virtual tours, as well as what the Blue Badge guiding qualification is all about. Hello, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Welcome to this episode of Ladies Who London podcast. This is Alex here. I hope you're doing very well this week. You might notice there's a slightly different opening to the show this week for a very good reason. So Emily is not here. We've already recorded this week's episode. In fact, we've got this week and next week already in the bag. The reason is, basically, Emily has a little personal project that she's been working on, and she hasn't been able to make it to this week's recording, which is a bit of a shame, but totally understandable when I tell you what she's up to. I'm currently recording this on Monday, 24th of May, and you're listening hopefully on the Wednesday. And hopefully by now, Emily will have managed to produce the next Lady Who Londons, because she has gone into labour with her first baby, who is a little girl. So by the time this goes out, I would really hope that we have another little lady with us, but we'll keep you updated in the next few weeks. Emily is completely convinced that she will still have time to do the podcast, but in the interim, we've got this week's podcast already recorded, and we have next week's as well, and then chances are, while Emily kind of finds her feet and figures out her new timetable, then we're going to have a couple of guest hosts coming on with me as well. And then Emily will be back in due course as and when she feels she's got time to come back. But she will be back, so don't panic. We are not carrying on Ladies Who London without Emily. So if the Goth Guide is your favourite guide, that's fine. She will be back at some point. So I'm sure you can all join me in wishing Emily many, many congratulations. And I'll let her tell you the details of the new arrival when she's back with us. So there we go. So it's down to me this week to let you know the results of the podcast pedestal. And I'm afraid I don't have too much of an answer for you on that. That my poll on Instagram seemed to disappear. I have the Ladies Who London poll, and I can't access Emily's because the plan was that she was going to come on and let me know about it. So we're going to leave the poll results for this week, and I will try and get them for next week. So don't panic. We will be back to normal soon. But this is all rather excitingly come at, when we weren't quite expecting it. So check back with us next week, and I will have hopefully the poll results for both this week and next week's podcast pedestal as well. So for this week, let's get on with the show.
So, Alex, it's your turn this week. The wheel landed in Whitechapel.
Yeah.
And you decided to go for...
Well, I wanted to go for the Whitechapel Bell Foundry because it's a bit of a legend. It's a bit of a local legend. And it is kind of perfectly timed because it's been in the news in the last couple of weeks. We're going to get to that. What do you know about the Whitechapel Bell Foundry?
I know that it's a beautiful building. It kind of stands out on the road at Whitechapel because it looks so much older than everything around it. It's obviously got links to quite a few famous bells, which I won't mention. I won't take it out of your mouth.
You're kind of right in that it does stick out on, it's on Whitechapel High Street, which is in the East End of London. If you know London at all, you'll know that you have the famous sort of Shoreditch and Spitalfield area, and Whitechapel is just below that. And if you say Whitechapel to most people, they'll immediately say, oh, Jack the Ripper. We're not going to go anywhere near Jack the Ripper on this podcast.
Ever.
But that's what it's kind of famous for. And the reason I mentioned that is because it gives you a bit of a sense of what Whitechapel used to be. It was always a really poor area, and it still is in places, but it's kind of gone through a very big period of gentrification and building and regeneration. So what's quite interesting about the Whitechapel Bell Foundry, you said it does stick out on the street because so many of the other buildings around it have moved and have changed. And it does stick out, but also because it's on a main road, you get so many people zooming past all the time, and they never really notice it because it's quite, you know, you'd sort of expect with this big industrial location that it would be this massive factory and you just couldn't miss it at all. It's actually not quite true. If you're looking at the frontages of the building, yes, absolutely, you go, oh, that's a nice, unique little one, but it's not sort of massive and towering, is it? It's quite modest.
No, it's quite tiny, really. Yeah.
I mean, the actual site is quite large and stretches sort of back behind that road, but you don't notice it in terms of its imposing structure like you would some industrial things. So, did you know that it is a Guinness World Record holder?
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Britain's oldest manufacturing company.
Gosh.
Yeah, I know, which makes it quite a unique place. And it spans the reign, if you were to put down the timescale of it, it spans the reign of 27 monarchs. So that's always a good, you know, staging post to show you how long it's been there. It goes from Elizabeth I to Elizabeth II. Which is quite nice.
That is very impressive.
Bookended there. And it is going to be bookended with Elizabeth II. And I'll explain why in a little bit. But it is very, very famous as a bell foundry. Which, how does a bell foundry get famous? Well, you mentioned briefly some of the bells that were made there. And I want to kind of take you back to when it was originally created, which would have been in the 1570s. So the time of Elizabeth I, and so it's been there for about 450 years. And if you would have gone past in times gone by, you'd have heard the sort of the clatter of the wheels over the floor and the sound of metal being hammered and the furnaces firing up. And it was what it was making was bells for the numerous churches that were being built all over the country. If you have a look at the map of it, it's quite an interesting little map, actually, of the layout of the thing. It's got all sorts of little rooms that have got random names on them. My favourite is the tuning room. Ooh. Because, of course, all bells are tuned to a particular note. So you've got to have a tuning room to make sure that you have got the tuning correct. And there was a machine and all sorts of stuff. And we're going to come on to the tuning of a particular bell later. But there was a variety of developments and enlargements that happened. And they didn't just make bells. They made, well, I say just bells. They didn't just make the big church bells. They also made hand bells and also the wheels made out of wood that you would use to transport the bells around. So there's quite a lot of stuff. All the kind of bell paraphernalia you need, they would create.
Gosh, you wouldn't want to work there and go in with a big hangover.
Oh, no.
Like, oh, God, will somebody stop ringing the bells?
Like, is that my hangover or is that just them testing next
Dong.
Week?
Dong!
And it gives you a sense of how Whitechapel was, you know, quite an industrial place. You had the docks nearby. East London was often where the industry was. And so you've got these furnaces going. It's going to be, you know, loud and smelly and busy. And I love the kind of the idea of all this kind of organised chaos, I guess, happening around here. So let's go back to the very beginning, which, as Mary Poppins said, is a very good place to start. Back in the 1570s, well, there's a little bit of a discussion over who we trace the foundry to. It's either a guy called Robert Dodds in 1567, or it's another Robert, called Robert Mott in 1572. Either way, it's about the 1570s. You can't know if often what happens in these things, and actually this happened with the Whitechapel Bell Foundry, is it goes through generations of families as well. So we can actually link people who worked at the foundry back to a bell maker in 1420, which is a guy called Robert Chamberlain. Now, he wasn't the Whitechapel Bell Foundry, but he links into it. So we can actually trace the link of founders of bells all the way back to the 1400s, even if it's not the actual company. But either way.
I mean, were they all called Robert?
I mean, it sounds like they might have been.
You've got three Bobbies there.
Very popular name, clearly. Well, at least in the bell ringing or bell founding world. It was definitely. So whichever way you slice the pudding, it's an institution in the area, isn't it? It's a very important spot. And because it is creating these bells, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of bells it was creating, they are in churches all over the world. And we'll come on to where they are in a second. It wasn't always on the spot that we know it as on Whitechapel High Street. It used to be, it moved there in the 1700s. And there was originally a kind of a coaching inn that was there called the Artichoke. Brilliant name for a pub. Let's bring that back. And then they moved in there in the 1700s. And in the 1800s, in the about 1810, there was an owner at the time. Now, this is not a Roberts. Yay, we've moved on. This is a Thomas Mears. And he listed all the bells cast at the foundry since 1738. And he totaled it at just under 2,000 bells.
Wow.
Which equates to around 25 per year. And we're not talking little bells here. We're talking absolute whoppers. You know, multi-ton bells. It's called in the trade heavy metal, the casting of these bronze bells, which I think is fantastic. So Whitechapel Bell Foundry are in the business of heavy metal. There we go.
Wow.
We have to have a little look and find out why it's so famous. It's basically because of the amount of bells and the actual bells that were being produced there. They could make huge size bells, absolutely enormous ones. So as a result, a lot of their bells were used in cathedrals. If you were to total up the number of bells found in different countries, you can get about 500 that you can find in Australia that were founded in Whitechapel, about 600 in the US, and there's at least 900 in Canada.
Wow, I had no idea that
huge amounts
they'd done that many, and to transport them as well.
Yeah, exactly. Transport, and we'll come on to the problems of transporting in a bit. One of the big bells for Canada is the Great Bell of Montreal.
Okay. So
if you're Canadian and you know that one, that is one from the Whitechapel Bell Foundry, and it becomes particularly famous for church bells for these big sort of institutional churches. So the National Cathedral in Washington DC has a bell that was founded at the Whitechapel Bell Foundry. There's a peal of 12 bells that was sent to Toronto Cathedral in 1997, also from here. If you're from the north of England, the Great Peter Bell of York Cathedral is from there. For us as Londoners, the St Paul's Cathedral Bell. Do you know the name of the bell? Can you remember?
He's called Tom, isn't he?
Yeah, Great Tom, nonetheless.
Is it not Robert?
No, it's not Robert for once. He was founded in 1716, and he is now in St Paul's Cathedral. That is the one that strikes the hour, not the kind of little twinkly ones.
Yeah.
It's the big boom one. It was a very good bell impression, I think you'll agree.
That's a very good bell impression.
Now, if you had to say, what is the most famous bell in London, what would you say it would be?
I would probably say, God, it's a bit of a hard one really, isn't it? Does it live around Westminster, Alex?
No. Well, I mean, there is one there. We're going to come on to him.
Oh, we're not actually talking about Ben.
We are going to, but I wouldn't say that's the most famous bell because people don't always know that Big Ben is the bell. But if you are a Londoner, what is your bell?
Oh, okay, the Bow Bells.
Yes, absolutely. So if you were going through the city of London, the church called St Mary le Bow, which is beautiful, and if you're in the area, highly recommend a visit. It founded the Bow Bells. Now, you know, you are a Londoner, aren't you? Are you? Where were you born?
Fantastic place called Essex.
Oh yes, of course, you're an Essex girl, I forgot. if you consider yourself to be a true Londoner, there, or a Cockney is what we call them. For those who Brits will know the term Cockney. People who are not British may not always know it. If you want to think what a Cockney is, don't think of Dick Van Dyke in Mary Poppins.
All right, you're looking at my plates of meats.
All right, Mary Poppins. But yeah, he's essentially a Cockney with a terrible accent. But if you are a Cockney, you are born within the sound of Bow Bells. And this is not Bow in East London, like some publications think it is. It is St Mary le Bow in the City of London. And so those bells, possibly the most important for Londoners, were founded in Whitechapel Bell Foundry as well. But you mentioned the big dog.
The big dog. The big dog of all bells.
Well, that's not it. Those are the quarter chimes.
Oh, well, okay.
He's the one that goes dong.
I was coming to that, Alex. Dong.
Sorry, I had to wait for the whole thing to play out.
Hang on a minute, I just had to work out what time it was. Yes, Big Ben,
El Grande Ben. Now my fellow guides will know, and some Londoners know. Big Ben.
Big Ben
is a Ben. Big Ben is not the tower, nor is it the clock. It is bell.
Alex.
I know, I'm changing your entire perception of London right now. It is the bell that's inside. And there is a fantastic story about Big Ben. I'm going to now do a QI-style question for you. Which bell foundry made Big Ben?
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm going to say, was it Whitechapel Bell Foundry?
Now, if I had a klaxon here, I'd be going, and this is like those of you who know QR, you know that they are very pedantic about the answers. Actually, no, not the first Big Ben. So, do you know about
Oh.
this? Do you know about the first and the second Big Ben?
Oh, in terms of the.
Well, yes. So, when it came to rebuilding the Houses of Parliament, Charles Barry, who was the architect, is busy building this amazing building, and he puts up, well, he's planning to put up this huge tower that we now know as the Elizabeth Tower, which has been renamed recently. And he wants it to have this massive clock and the bell that goes inside. And it was decided that he was going to really up the ante and make the largest bell ever made in the UK at the time, which was going to be 14 tons. Plus the quarter chime bells, which are the ones that you just gave me a wonderful rendition of right there. Do you want to do it again? That's it. I mean, that was more of like jazz version of Oh, I'd love to hear that. Anyway, so when they were building this, they put the bell out to tender. And there were three foundries that put their hat in the ring. There were foundries, all over the country for myriad churches that are popping up. We have the Whitechapel Bell Foundry, of course, who was run by a guy called Mr. Mears. It wasn't the Thomas Mears from earlier, it was his son Mears. Then there was John Warner and Sons, who were based in Cripplegate, so also in the East End of London, and John Taylor and Co. More Johns, goodness, we've gone from the Roberts to the Johns, and Co. of Loughborough. So these are the three major ones that put their hats in the ring. And Mr. Mears of Whitechapel Bell Foundry, he kind of does the big old swagger, I'm the big dog around here, and he tootles in and he goes, hey, whatever, we're the only ones with the expertise or the ability to make one so big. We've done one, I think they've done one that was about 9 or 10 tons, which at that time was the biggest. And he was like, yay, we can do it, none of these other Johnny come latelys have got the ability to do it. And
I'm
Warner's
imagining that his jacket, instead of having buttons, he's just got bells,
I know,
bells
just
hanging absolutely
I like the idea that
everywhere.
he's one of those sort of dodgy watch salesmen, and he kind of opens it. What about a bell?
What about them?
What bell? Got plenty of bells. 14 tons, no problem, mate. Go around the back, my missus will sort you out. Anyway, so the other two that were in the mix, that we had Taylors, who went in and they said, this is our pitch, but we want payment up front. And the government went, what? Nope. So they were out. But Warner's piped up against Mr. Mears's, grandstanding, went, actually, we've just had two massive new furnaces commissioned up in Stockton-on-Tees in the north of England. And so immediately Mears is like, ooh, I maybe over egg this one. And a chap called Edmund Dennison was appointed as he was kind of like the intermediary and the organizer of the whole thing. So he's in charge of dealing with the bids and picking the right people. And he went with Warner's. He did not go with the Whitechapel Bell Foundry. Because of their Teesside furnaces, he was like, yeah, that sounds pretty good. We'll have you. So in 1856, the furnaces are fired up. Now, Mr. Mears, of course, has gone back to Whitechapel, licking his wounds and thinking, oh, stuff that one. So 1856, you get everything moving and the bell is cast. When they open the mold, it's brilliant. It's a really successful casting. And preparations are made to bring it to London. And it was decided that the roads were too bad to risk it. We hadn't really got into the stage of paving everything by then, so it was a bit of a tricky journey. So they thought, right, well, we'll take it from Hartlepool, also topical, and we're going to pop it on a ship and take it down via the water. It's much, much better. And this is where we start to see the first problems with it. The bell, which was supposed to be 14 tons, is actually 2 tons more than was planned. It was 16 tons. So when they popped it on this boat, it was on this sort of, I guess, some kind of structure to keep it in place. And it was so heavy that it broke through that, crashed off it, and crashed onto the deck of the ship and damaged the ship. And the ship had to be brought back in to dry dock for repairs before it can get set going. So,
Bloody hell, it was that heavy that it broke the ship.
Exactly. And I guess, they probably wouldn't have had, I don't know if they'd have had the means to weigh it exactly. They'd have probably gone with, we think it's this, but anyway, 2 tons more heavy. More heavy? Heavier.
Have you heard?
Grammar's my friend today. And so eventually the ship sets off and we encounter another problem. There is a massive storm and rumours spread that the ship has gone down in the storm and the bell has been lost. And everyone's thinking, you know, these Londoners have been promised this massive tower with a bell and everything, and they're starting to think, we're never going to get this. It's, you know, it's not going to happen. Anyway, all of a sudden, the boat pitches up in London. Hurrah, it's there, fantastic. The bell is checked, the bell is fine. So we've got through two of the first initial problems. It's loaded onto a carriage and it's towed, well, firstly to the their foundry in London for a bit of a, just a check and all that kind of thing. And then it's towed to Westminster with huge crowds all around the streets. It was a massive celebration. People were really excited to see this huge 16-ton bell come through London and be installed. So when it got to Westminster, fantastic timing, the tower wasn't yet complete. And it's actually quite a good job that it wasn't complete. So what happened? They built a kind of structure. It's been described as a gallows, I guess, a kind of some sort of hanging thing out of wood at the bottom, which they put the bell on because, you know, they couldn't put it up in the tower. And they thought, right, well, we have to do tests on it anyway. We're going to test it extensively. Hmm. And that's what they did. Because the bell was a bit larger than they had planned, they also used a bigger hammer. And they, for about a year, they tested it on, you know, constantly ringing it, checking it was all fine. And about a year in, the bell thought, I've had enough of this. And the bell cracked.
Whilst it was in the bottom of the tower.
Yes. Luckily, still, it hadn't gone up to the top of the tower because, frankly.
Who was the one that gave it a whack?
Well, now this is the thing, is there was a bit of a fight over whose fault it was. Mm. Warners said that it was Denison's fault because he had commissioned this extra large hammer. And Denison said it's Warner's fault for not making a structurally sound bell.
Oh dear.
Yeah. So whichever way it went, wherever the problem or the fault lay, the bell was smashed up because it wasn't usable. So, and actually Denison said, look, it smashed up a bit too easy. So I think actually it's not my fault. It's Warner's fault anyway. So we're back to square one. We have no bell for the tower. Now into this, guess who pops up again? Mr. Mears of the Whitechapel Bell Foundry. And he goes, well, look, if we're doing it again, I'm going to tender again. And they go, okay, fine. So he puts his bid in. And Warner's bid comes back in too. And Warner's was horrifyingly expensive. And Mears was very reasonable. Now, whether or not he had specifically made it reasonable, I don't know.
So I'm going to get this. I'm going to get this job.
I'm going to undercut and get it. Because let's face it, we now know that Whitechapel Bell Foundry founded Big Ben, the bell in Big Ben. So realistically, it's worth it even for the cachet. Just notice it's gone really
Is that rain?
That's rain. Can you hear it on the mic?
Yeah.
Oh my god. Let me just shut the curtain.
Need a hot chocolate and marshmallows for this kind of weather.
You really do, don't we? Oh yeah, it does feel quite wintry. I hate May. May has become what April used to be, isn't it? And April's now lovely.
Yeah, well, May last year it was perfect.
Was it? I thought May was rainy, but April was gorgeous.
Oh, I remember May being lovely.
Oh, maybe not. Okay. Where are we? Right, I'm going to say that it has started raining really heavily. So if you can hear that in the background, I do apologise. Anyway, so Mears comes in with this really reasonable bid and Whitechapel Bell Foundry, funnily enough, they get the contract because Denison says, you know what? Yeah, that's fine. Warner's is massively expensive and really hasn't proven himself to be brilliant. And it's a much more logical place to cast it. It's in the East End of London. You don't have to worry about carting it across the country. And into all of this, Londoners are starting to, you know, they've seen the bell arrive. They were already thinking this is taking a while. And then it falls apart. So they think, are we ever going to get this? And there's a little rhyme that they used to say. It's brilliant. It's just four lines. Poor Mr. Warner is put in a corner for making a bad Big Ben. Good Mr. Mears, or so it appears, will make us a new one. But when?
Ooh, how mystical.
All of London is sort of chanting this little ditty about the two chaps involved in this big old fight-off. Anyway, Mr. Mears gets straight to work. He thinks, right, let's just get on with it. And he casts the bell to the specifications. In fact, it's slightly lighter. It's 13 and a half tons. And what's also very helpful is that at the very start of the project, when Mr. Warner had taken it on, he got the commission to do the bell plus all of the quarter chimes as well. And they all have to be harmonised to the same note. So it's in the tone of E, which is, you know, what you always have to do with bells. You pick your note and then you can harmonise everything. And so Mr. Mears, as well as doing all of this, he also had to cast it in the tone of E to match, to harmonise with these smaller quarter bells. They were fine. They were okay. So we've already got them. So he's got to make the massive one to fit in, which I imagine would have been quite a feat to do.
Definitely. So. I didn't even think about having to actually chime it in as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible. So the official Big Ben bell is installed in 1859.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of do the whole big hammer thing again. You know, boys and their toys, right?
God, can you imagine? Be like, I don't want to do it. No, you do it. Like, you do.
No, they love it. They're still doing it with this massive hammer.
Oh.
And it cracks the current Big Bell, the Big Ben that we have. So the one that we've got is also cracked. But you couldn't really take, you know, it was already up in the tower. So by this point, it's up there, it's installed. And it was silent for 4 years while they had to figure out what to do about it. And in the end, they decided they were going to turn it about 90 degrees and bring in a smaller hammer. And it is still in operation today. So that is still the chiming, or the hour chime that you'll hear is still that bell from 1859.
I love that. I love that Big Ben has got a big crack in it.
Yeah. And it's not the only famous bell to have a crack in it as well. Do you know what other famous bell has a crack in it that might have been founded at Whitechapel Bell Foundry?
Is it the Liberty Bell?
It is, absolutely. So for those American listeners to the podcast, I know we have some. The Liberty Bell that you have in Philadelphia, it was also made in Whitechapel Bell Foundry, and it also has a crack. And at this point, I feel like I'm casting aspersions on the quality of the work coming from the Bell Foundry. It's often not. They give them the bell and they go, right, this is what you need to make it sound perfect. And these lads are like, nah, that looks too small. Let's give it a proper whack and let's get the most volume out of it. And of course, it's always too big. So that's what they did with Liberty Bell as well. They smashed it with a big old hammer and cracked it. Hurrah, hurrah. So there we go.
So and I presume they would have had to have, I mean, for instance, when they first kind of unveiled our current Big Ben bell, you know, would they have had to have earphones on, you know, like earpieces, protective gear?
I mean, it's a good question. I know. Well, they've turned it off at the minute because the workers are up there all the time and it would be detrimental to their... There's some thunder.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. It would be detrimental to their hearing. But, you know, we're talking about an era where health and safety is not at the forefront. So I have to say, I don't know whether or not they would have been wearing mufflers of any description.
Mufflers?
Ear mufflers. Muffle the sound, no?
Are they called mufflers?
Well,
I guess they are, aren't they? Mufflers.
Maybe they're not.
Maybe they are. Mufflers.
Sounds like a really sweet little creature, doesn't it? A muffler.
A little muffler.
I love that we both went the same to the same
thing. Little muffler. Okay, anyway.
Yeah, we hate each other, don't we? I'm sure you'll be aware that the Whitechapel Bell Foundry closed a couple of years ago. And I have to say, I was devastated because it's one of those places I thought, oh, I've always wanted to go and do a tour while they were casting and this, that and the other. And I thought, I'll get round to that one day. It won't go anywhere. And of course, it flipping well did, didn't it?
It did.
So 2017, it closed for the last time. It's been there for best part of 450 years. And the last owner was a guy called Alan Hughes. And he was asked, you know, all over the place about why it was closing, and he's, you know, there's a variety of reasons for it. Firstly, the demand for church bells is falling. We're not building as many churches anymore, and to be honest, the quality of the bells are so good that there's, you know, you make them 400 years ago, they're still going.
Yeah.
So it's that classic thing of doing yourself out of business because you're too good. Plus there's regulations on emissions as well in central London, so that was causing problems. Plus, it's such an old building. He had got a quote in for rewiring it, which really needed to happen. And the quote was about £500,000. And it's now, anyway, not so much back in the day, but now it's a really hard industry to make any livable money from. So all of that together really meant that he didn't have much of a choice. He had to close it. But there's been a massive controversy since it was closed, because what do you do with something that is, you know, 450 years old, is part of East London's heritage, has been an employer for literally centuries, and is a place that everybody really holds dear, and the fact that we're losing a lot of our heritage. Well, you would think that the logical thing to do would be to turn it into a heritage site, possibly even to keep some of the founding going in there in some form. But actually what happened is it was sold, it's more thunder, it was sold to a capital investor, which is, you know, something that happens a lot. It was an American firm and they bought it up. And they then sold it on very quickly to another firm called Radcliffe Capital. Now, Radcliffe Capital have plans to turn the site into a boutique hotel with a rooftop pool and all of this, plus cafes and restaurants and workspaces and stuff like that. And there was a huge amount of very high-profile campaigners who didn't agree. And a petition was brought forward in 2019, I think it was now, maybe 18. And there were alternatives that were put forward as well. And campaigners wanted it as a heritage site, possibly even still a foundry. And there was a massive local clash. The area's changed so much. You've had the global finance come in. It's taken its toll a lot on the area. And a lot of locals feel very passionately about the heritage. And there was a chap called Stephen Clark who came in and offered to buy the Whitechapel Bell Foundry. Now, he's got form because he had previously bought the Middleport Pottery in Stoke-on-Trent, which is the UK's oldest working china factory. If you've seen The Great Pottery Throwdown, have you ever watched that show?
No.
Oh, I love it. It's like the Great British Bake Off or the Great British Sewing Bee, but it's for pottery. And it's delightful. If you can find it, I think it's on the BBC, might still be on there. Watch it. It's heaven. But they filmed that in the Middleport Pottery. And the Stoke-on-Trent potteries were, for many centuries, just really at the top of their game. It was famous worldwide. And the same thing, these things decline a bit, and it was on the verge of having to be shut down. And Stephen Clark came in and he kept it going within the heritage model. So he bought it up, and it still produces world-class pottery now, which is amazing. And so he wanted to do the same thing with the Bell Foundry in the East End. But the deal had already been done, and he was in touch with the chap who was selling it, Alan Hughes. But this deal had basically already been done, and in that time, not only had the deal been done, but that initial investor had sold it on to Radcliffe Capital. So the hope of being able to buy it back was really, that had disappeared.
It had moved through so many hoops by that point.
Exactly, because they were sort of hoping that they could intercept the deal and go to the original guys and say, look, we know that you've bought this, but we want to have it for heritage, so can we buy it off you? And in the meantime, these guys had flipped it very, very quickly, and they'd made nearly £3 million on the flip. So, yeah, by selling it on. So this huge petition was presented to the government, including people such as Dan Cruikshank, who I'm sure you know is very well known for protecting heritage and kind of being a spokesman for conserving history. And he was part of it. And the planning application was submitted in 2018. Campaigners also wrote to the Secretary of State for Communities and Local Government, a guy called Robert Jenrick. And very unexpectedly, actually, he suspended the planning approval whilst the whole thing underwent a public inquiry. And so there was hope that it could still be retained. And we found out just a couple of weeks ago in the around the 14th or 15th of May, that the plans have now been rubber stamped and it is going ahead. So it is going to become a luxury boutique hotel.
Oh, bloody hell.
Which is a source of real disappointment for a lot of the locals who've campaigned for it, because it really is an amazing place with so much rich heritage and history. But anyway,
and it's just so beautiful to look at. Like, really, you pass one sign, you've got this old crane just attached to one of the walls. The front of it, it's got this like lovely kind of mustardy colour. It's just such a shame.
And I should say that Radcliffe Capital have said they're going to refurbish it in a sort of respectful way and trying to, conserve the heritage. But realistically, locals wanted it to, wanted you to be able to go and experience one of the last remaining industries in London. These things, we lose them so quickly. And that's a real shame. You can, however, still buy Whitechapel Bells, because Alan Hughes, when he closed it down and sold it off, he trademarked he got legal protection for the branding of Whitechapel Bell. So he still retains the logo and the rights to the, the actual quality thing. And it's now been trademarked, the Whitechapel Bell Foundry as a brand. And it's been licensed to a company called the Westley Group, who are, funnily enough, in Stoke-on-Trent. And they still make bells with the Whitechapel logo. So you can actually still buy a Whitechapel Bell.
That's nice.
Won't be made in Whitechapel any longer. And they still make and sell handbells as well, which you can have with the, with the Whitechapel.
I'd like it, you know, if you were staying in this boutique hotel, that, you know, you had all these kind of bell paraphernalia. Yeah. You know, like a little bell by everybody's bed.
It would be something, wouldn't it? Yeah. I don't. I suspect that they, well, I suspect that they would at least acknowledge that heritage. So yeah, watch the space. But I mean, literally, it's hot off the press, that news. So I suspect maybe there is still fighting the old dog yet. I think we may well see more protests and campaigns, whether or not they'll be successful. I mean, it's not looking great now, but there we go. So a little bit of an ignominious end to something that has been an incredible bit of East End history. And frankly, I think is just such an exciting place when you consider the impact that it's had all over the world.
Absolutely. Especially, you know, that it's been going since Elizabeth I to Elizabeth II. It's, yeah, wow.
It's the kind of thing that you always assume will always be there. And then when it ends, you're like, oh, of course not, because things go in cycles, don't they? And yeah, just because we see things as an institution in our lifetimes, you think, of course, that could never change. And then if you were to come back in 400 years and see, you know, the difference that there'd be, it would be incredible. So yeah.
I wonder if they're at least going to keep the name, you know, Bell Foundry Boutique Hotel or something, just so that, you know, there's still a bit of a nod.
Yeah, I mean, at the minute, I thought it's way too early for those sort of details. But yeah, you would hope so.
Yeah, we'll see. But wow, ding dong, that was fantastic.
Honestly, what you like. You've been waiting for that, haven't you?
Oh, dear. And it won't be long until we do hear Big Bang ding dong.
I can't wait. Yeah, so it's supposed to be October of this year, isn't it, I think? Mm. Well, yeah,
around that time. Yeah. Around that time.
Because that's been a while. That's been, what was it, 2018? Was it 2018?
Yes.
Or 17, 2018? Maybe.
Maybe the end of 17. It's been a bloody long time.
Actually, I think it was 2017.
Maybe it was 2017.
Yeah, anyway, been far too long. Bring back Big Ben, I say.
Far too long. But yes, wonderful. Thank you very much, Alex.
Podcast Pedestal.
So we have to pick our podcast pedestals.
Oh, God.
What are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking the hammer, but...
Ooh, yeah.
You know, is that a bit naughty, going for the hammer?
No, go for the hammer. Go for the hammer.
But I want a particular hammer. I want the second hammer that cracked our current Big Ben bell.
Oh, okay.
Not the first one.
Should I go for the first one? We can have a hammer off.
Yeah, I'm going to go for the hammer that cracked Big Ben.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting.
I do think that's quite naughty, though, because it is quite cruxy.
So, crucially, the second hammer. So, the one that gave it the crack that it's got today.
Yes.
Okay. Well, in that case, do you know what? Let's have a hammer off. I'm going to go.
Oh, my God. You're going to go for the first.
Because for me, I think that this is where we're really going to see. Yeah. So I'm going to go for the first hammer, because if it weren't for the first hammer, Whitechapel Bell Foundry would not have got the contract to do the bell. Because you've got Warners, who bring in this massive 16-ton bell and this overlarge hammer, which cracks it. And because it's already at the bottom, can't be taken away. Therefore, a new one has to be taken away. So a new one has to be made. And that's where Whitechapel Bell Foundry get their all-important contract to make them the supplier of the Big Ben bell. So I'm going for hammer one.
True, but it didn't actually break a bell that was created in the bell foundry that you're talking about.
No, but it paved the way.
Did pave the way. But... I just love the idea that they've got it hoisted up. It's ready. There's no way that they could ruin it again. And then, boof. And the crack is still there today. And I love those kind of things where, you know, when you look up at the tower and when people pass Big Ben next, they'll think, oh, there's a crack up there.
Or they might pass and think, oh, if it weren't for that first hammer, we wouldn't have,
I don't think they would, Alex.
Have that amazing Big Ben bell that we have today.
So how are you? How are we going to put this on
Hammer
the
one
poll?
and hammer two.
Hammer one and hammer two. Oh my God. Hammer two, guys.
It's a hammer, hammer off.
It's hammer time. Oh, all right. Wow. Let's see.
So those are your choices, chaps. Hammer one, which is the most important one, and hammer two, which, you know, just is whatever.
No, hammer two is incredibly important. It's, you know, a wonderful piece of history that, as well, the bell that the second hammer touched still exists. Your bell that you're going on about was broken to pieces.
Yes, but your bell wouldn't exist if it weren't for the first hammer, which broke the original bell.
Well, we'll see what people think, Alex.
Okay, all right. So those are your options for next week. Pretty easy to remember. Hopefully we can remember them. We always forget them every week. What was it again?
Yeah, what did you choose?
Yeah, so hopefully next week we can both remember them. So that's it. Yay.
Yay.
So before we get on to the Wheel of Destiny, what news? What have you got coming up?
So I don't know if anyone's following me on Instagram, which is Guide Emily. but I've started a new little kind of Friday segment where every Friday for 5 minutes, I talk about an artist or a piece of art. I'm doing that.
Yay.
I'm getting people to come and follow my artistic adventure.
And are you still doing your Sketch History Lives as well?
Yes, I've got a couple of those coming up. So make sure you also follow Sketch_History and you'll find out when I'm doing my live drawings.
And I'm going to plug for her. She does sell her art as well, and it's really lovely.
Oh, thank you, darling.
It's great for prezzies and things like that.
Oh, thanks. And what about you? What are you doing?
Well, I have a couple of public walks coming up, and we've still got the Tudor Box, which is going strong. And hopefully by now I will have launched my second one. So if you want to come and have another go at a different escape room, that will be up, I hope. Edit. It's not, but it will be soon.
The Wheel of Destiny.
Here we go then. It's your favourite.
Oh, right. Yes. Sorry. I just can't stop thinking about bells.
Oh.
Right. Yes. So where do I want it to land? Let's just go for it and see what happens, which is what I do every week because I'm so underprepared. okay. Off we go. Oh, it's landed on Fleet Street.
Oh, okay. Have we been there before? Yes.
Well, we have, haven't we?
We talked about the River Fleet yonks ago, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. So we've got...
You can't do the River Fleet again.
Can't obviously do Somerset House. We've done that.
Yep.
What have you got down there? You've got LSC. You've got...
Sweeney Todd.
Newspapers. Sweeney Todd. St Clement Danes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know who stands at the front of St Clement Danes Church? Or at the back? Stands at the back?
Oh, Dr. Johnson.
Dr. Johnson with his curly hair.
Legend.
Oh, yes. I'm going to talk about Dr. Samuel Johnson, who lived just off of Fleet Street. And, it's that fabulous statue of him just outside of his parish church. So, yes, I'm going to talk about Dr. Samuel Johnson.
Legend. And I do actually mention Samuel Johnson on my Harlots tour as well.
Oh, there you go.
Tour of the Georgian sex trade, because he pops up briefly in that one as well.
That naughty man. That is Samuel.
So there we go. That is it for this week. Thank you all so much for coming. Really appreciate you coming along. Please do like and subscribe and rate the podcast. And then we can read out more wonderful reviews like Alex and Emily secretly hate each other, which I think is hilarious.
And please keep on voting for the pod. I'm just so happy that we got 130 odd votes.
I'm thrilled.
This last week. So, yeah, brilliant.
Vote for Hammer 1 and we're all good.
Hammer 2. Hammer 2. That's where it's at.
A wonderful week. Don't know why.
Wonderful week.
Wonderful week. I'm all Transylvanian there. I was watching Dracula the other day. It's stuck. Anyway, have a great week and we will see you all. Such a weird ending.
Just imagine you blood come out of your neck.
Of course you would, goth guide.
Oh dear. Anyway, have a lovely week, everybody.
Yes.
And take care of yourselves. See you next week.
Bye.